Well, some explosive revelations yesterday. We did hear a little bit from Jenny West earlier this morning. She suggested that she was told by Amy Brown that it was a present given to somebody. Stuart Ayres has denied ever using the word present, but I gather ICAC's taken an interest in this inquiry now.
Well, the mere prospect of another ICAC investigation into this New South Wales government is really, really troubling. And the evidence that we did hear yesterday was explosive. Miss West apparently was told that she couldn't get the job because it was going to be a present for someone. She was so alarmed by that that she immediately made a note within 20 minutes of being told and sent it off to her lawyers as a record. And that's before anyone had any idea that John Barilaro may have been interested in getting this job. I certainly think that people are entitled to ask whether or not there is something rotten in the state of New South Wales, especially in a government that's now been in office for more than 12 years.
When this first hit the fan, so to speak, I think we're all under the impression that somebody was verbally sort of told that they may have the job, but I gather it went a lot further than that. I believe Jenny West actually had a contract that the then Premier Gladys Berejiklian had signed off on. Is that correct?
Well, she certainly had a contract drawn up within 2 days of being offered the job. And she was sent a note that approved the appointment that Gladys Berejiklian had signed. And that was in August last year. And within the span of 4 weeks, she goes from having a contract on the table, a note signed by the former Premier, to having the offer withdrawn. But not just that, she was told that her existing job was to be made redundant. She went from going to New York to going towards redundancy in the span of just 4 weeks.
That's extraordinary. So did she, and I believe she was given, what, 30, the normal severance payment, and she's now unemployed. Is that correct?
Yes. She was made redundant in November last year. She received her statutory entitlement, and she's in the process of getting another job. And I just got to say, like, I mean, Miss West here has done nothing wrong. All she did was put her name up for a job. She went through a rigorous selection process. She was interviewed by the incoming head of the public service. She was offered the job. She had that offer taken off her. And then she's made redundant. And then, lo and behold, a whole new process is launched that leads to the appointment of Mr. Barilaro.
And the head of the Premier's Department, Michael Coutts-Trotter, seems to be sort of in the middle of all of this. From what I heard yesterday, Jenny West's responses and her statements yesterday, she actually made inquiries to Michael Coutts-Trotter and received no reply. Is that the way you understand it as well?
Yeah, the evidence in front of the committee shows that she tried to get a meeting with the head of the Department of Premier and Cabinet in October last year, in which she could talk about why she was being made redundant. And she never got that meeting. And the only contact she seemed to have with the Premier's Department was when they made her redundant just 6 weeks later. And again, like, it raises very serious questions about how all these shenanigans could have taken place, because even the most basic of courtesy would suggest that if someone is seeking a meeting, you at least reply to the request regardless of whether or not you take the meeting. And certainly on a matter this serious.
Yeah, yeah. And look, listening yesterday, I heard Jenny West say that she had gone as far as engaging removalists. She'd explored schools for her children and also accommodation. So she was all set to go to the United States, and then all of a sudden it was literally ripped out from under her.
Yeah, you can understand, just as a human being, it's a dream job. Like, she's worked her entire life to sort of develop the skills to do. On top of that, she gets the job, and she's told that it's so urgent that she gets to New York that she makes immediate preparations to relocate her life there, and then has it all effectively yanked from her as some form of a manoeuvre in a political war for which she's a pawn.
Right. Look, as I understand it too, the New South Wales corruption watchdog ICAC is considering whether or not to investigate the circumstances in which John Barilaro was appointed. You obviously think they should be investigating it?
Well, I certainly think that if it's up to the integrity agencies to decide what warrants a corruption investigation. But certainly there are very serious questions to be answered here regardless, and including about how involved the ministers of the Perrottet government were, and including how involved Mr. Perrottet was himself. Because the other evidence we're hearing is that every step along the way, the ministers are either getting written briefings or they're being told directly by their department as to precisely what's going on. And equally, it does seem like there was close involvement of the minister's offices in what was meant to be an independent process. Yeah. And there are, raises very serious questions about their conduct that they're going to have to answer, certainly to the parliament and up to an integrity agency as to whether that integrity agency wants to ask them as well.
Tuesday morning with Richard King, my guest is Labor opposition treasurer Daniel Mookie, who's a part of the Upper House inquiry looking into the appointment of John Barilaro to this US Trade Commissioner's job. The inquiry continues today, Daniel?
The inquiry will resume next week.
Next week.
We want to hear from other public servants that were involved in the decision that to bring a cabinet submission at the request of former Deputy Premier John Barilaro that led to the changing process. And we also want to hear from some former members of Mr. Barilaro's staff as well.
Look, on a very different tack, a new national anti-racism campaign gets underway this week. As the son of migrants from India, you were born in Blacktown, grew up in Blacktown. I dare say you've experienced, certainly as a youngster growing up in Blacktown and going to school, there would have been instances of prejudice and racism. Do you think things have changed since those days, Daniel?
I do think things have changed, and I always think we can do more to make sure that everybody is welcome, especially those who come here to make a contribution. My parents came from India in 1973. I was born here in 1982. Certainly, you get the playground racism, which lots of kids have experienced, but equally you get a lot of the compassion as well from lots of different people. And ultimately, it is the case that people who are prepared to have a go usually do get a fair go, but we can always do more to make sure everyone's welcome here.
Right, and the situation re the flags on top of Sydney Harbour Bridge, sense has prevailed. Are you one that like the rest of us thought spending millions of dollars on flagpoles on the Sydney Harbour Bridge was perhaps not a good way to spend taxpayers' money?
Oh, absolutely. I thought that it was ridiculous that somehow we had decided to build the world's most expensive flagpole above the Harbour Bridge. I think common sense here has prevailed. We're in a position in which we can show the Aboriginal flag at the same time we're showing the Australian flag, and we're not having to spend $25 million of the public's money on it. I think, again, the Premier and the Treasurer need to sort of explain how it's possible that they ever thought it was a good idea to build the world's most expensive flagpole at the cost of $25 million to the public.
And if and heaven forbid it happens, Queensland defeat New South Wales tomorrow night in State of Origin 3, which flag will come down to be replaced by the Queensland flag?
That's a good question. I'd love to hear an answer, but I hope that the Blues win tomorrow night to avoid that dilemma altogether.
Yeah, right. And to the flood situation, which certainly in my neck of the woods in the Hunter Valley is a real issue, a number of road closures, many people affected. Your leader, Chris Minns, was here yesterday with Jenny Aitchison, the member for Maitland, and also Kate Washington, the member for Port Stephens. I think Chris highlighted the fact and pointing to the situation in the Northern Rivers. As soon as the media departed and the politicians departed, we forgot about them. Do you think a lot more should be done to help those that have been affected by the recent flooding?
Yeah, I hate to feel that anybody who's been affected by the recent flooding, no matter where you are in New South Wales, would be forgotten as soon as the cameras move on. I know that so many families in Lismore are battling to be treated fairly in the reconstruction phase, both with the government and their insurance companies. And I certainly think that we've got to learn the lessons from the Northern Rivers. We've got to learn the lessons from all the other flood events as well and make sure that we're working in partnership with families and local communities as they get back on their feet to recover.
Thank you very much for your time this morning and have a good day, Daniel.
Thank you, Richard. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, Daniel Mookie, New South Wales Shadow Treasurer on a number of subjects, and he's a part of that Upper House inquiry, which, as he said, continues next week, looking into the appointment of John Barilaro to that $500,000 position as New South Wales Trade Commissioner to the United States.